Shouldn't come as a surprise to anyone that Tim's overcomplicating things.
Shut up.
We're geeks without God. We don't recognize moral authority. We don't accept divine superiority. We're geeks without God.
Welcome to Geeks Without God. I'm your host, Tim Wick. We are live at Convergence 2014. This is amazing. It is our second anniversary.
Yay.
Yeah, I know.
We're entering the terrible twos.
The first 2 years were pretty terrible. So yeah. I am your host, Tim Wick. I'm joined as always by my co-host, Molly Glover.
Hello.
And Nick Glover. And we are very excited to have a super special guest with us. We have Dr. Rubidium from Skeptics over here. How you doing?
Hello. Thank you for having me.
I was trying to figure out if we should call you Dr. Rubidium or Doctor or Ray.
Ray's fine.
Ray. We'll call you Ray. Yeah. That's sweet. Awesome. Well, welcome to the podcast. We're really excited to have you.
Me too.
So what we thought we would talk about today is, as I understand from reading the short bio that was sent to me before we spoke, that you are a chemist. Is that right?
That is true.
You totally do chemistry.
I totally do.
I love chemistry. Chemistry is awesome.
Yay! It's the maddest of the sciences.
Yeah. You know, when you're talking about mad science. It is the best science.
If you're a physicist, you can suck it.
I'm not going to argue with a chemist.
Yeah. I'm not going to argue with a chemist because she could totally blow me up.
Actually, you know, physicists, they have space. Now that is pretty cool.
That's true. Space isn't bad.
Yeah.
Isn't bad. Geeks without God. Space isn't bad.
That's
a first bumper sticker.
Yeah. I like dinosaurs.
Dinosaurs?
Biology, you know, with the dinosaurs.
Biology has dinosaurs.
Yeah. But everything's over and done with archaeology.
But baby hippos are so cute.
They are, but you can blow stuff up.
True story.
It's true. You just mix some stuff together and stuff blows up. So how did you become a chemist? Did you always want to be a chemist? Were you always like, I want to mix stuff together?
No, I wanted to be a lawyer.
Really?
Yeah.
See, I wish I'd known this, but no, I don't. I'm glad I didn't know this before we started.
You wanted to be a millionaire?
I wanted to be a lawyer because...
A lawyer. See, this is why I can't hear down here. That's important. I'm glad that I clarified because I was about to get very confused.
Yeah, I like arguing. I like snazzy suits and I like bourbon.
Mm. And those are all lawyer things.
I wanted to be a lawyer too. What made you change your mind?
You have to actually do the lawyering part. I realized that I didn't want to be a lawyer. I wanted to be a judge because I like to not wear pants and boss people around.
Oh.
But then I realized you have to do the lawyery stuff first, and then you can kind of become a judge later.
There are places in the South where I don't think you have to be a lawyer first.
Or human.
Are there dog judges now in the South?
Yeah. You haven't heard of the Louisiana dog courts?
Well, it's amazing. Then I went to an eighth grade trip to Washington, D.C., and we got to visit an FBI field office, and they had some forensic scientists. And that was really the first time in my experience. I'm the first person in my family, my immediate family, to go to college, and the first person to go to graduate school. So that was really, that trip was the first time I'd seen science as being applied science. Mm-hmm. I'd seen basic research and, you know, of course, you know, Carl Sagan, but that seemed, I just didn't connect with that. That wasn't a connection for me. But when I went on this eighth grade trip to see this the applied end of science and it being used to help kind of solve mysteries, that was really, that just blew my mind. And so ever since that eighth grade trip, I've just been obsessed with forensic science and chemistry and got really into, you know, Agatha Christie and Patricia Cornwell and all of that kind of thing, and decided to use my powers for good.
Awesome.
Well, so, good-ish.
Good-ish. So forensic science, were they, when you, eighth grade, was CSI on TV yet?
Because I'm old.
Well, you're younger than me, and that's the only judgment I can make, I'm afraid.
No, that was...
Older than me or younger than me is about all I can figure out.
Yeah, eighth grade, I'm 39 years old.
Yes, younger than me.
So I think in Hollywood years, that means I'm like 90.
Yeah,
I'm not really sure how the math works. I think that's right, though. So no, when I went, it was, I think that was maybe around, that was probably either right around or a year maybe before Patricia Cornwell's first book came out, the Scarpetta series. That was really, really crazy popular, but definitely years before CSI. But I definitely grew up with Quincy.
Oh, yeah, Quincy.
Quincy
yeah.
was definitely, you know, that was, I used to watch that with my dad on Nick at Night.
yeah.
Jack Klugman, right?
Yes.
Right, okay.
yes, so that was, and then of course, Murder, She Wrote, which is my jam. That's my
Murder,
favorite.
Murder, She Wrote, yeah. You know, the thing about Murder, She Wrote, I don't know if anybody else ever thought about this when they were watching this show. I'm like, I would never invite Jessica Fletcher to my house.
She's this shady bitch.
Because
I'll be
every
honest
time,
with you.
Yeah. every time you bring yeah. her to a dinner party, somebody dies and you get blamed.
No, she goes anywhere, right?
Yeah,
and her nephew and her niece and all of her friends, doesn't matter what country she goes to, doesn't matter what state she goes to,
somebody
always dies.
And,
it's
gotta be exhausting. And you always get blamed. Whoever brings Jessica
yeah,
Fletcher there.
Yeah.
yeah,
it's never JB. It's
yeah.
always the nephew, the niece, the BFF.
Well, and it's the thing is, they say that if, you know, if everyone you meet is an asshole, that maybe you're the asshole.
Yes.
So I wonder, I mean, I would love to rewatch Murder, She Wrote with the idea that maybe she was doing all of these killings.
well.
And it's like a Tyler Durden situation
Jessica
where like
Fletcher.
She's getting
yeah.
away with it.
Jessica Fletcher
nerd.
Is a mass murderer.
Yeah.
she's
yeah.
a serial
That's how
killer.
Much of a nerd I am.
I think we could accomplish this like, with some fan editing.
Yeah, she's a serial killer whose like particular kink is that she likes to blame others for the murders of random strangers that
no
she
one
meets.
Expects the kindly old writer.
Yeah. Like,
and
yeah.
she looks awesome because what she does is she exonerates the person who is innocent and everybody's like, wow, she's such a nice person.
But this is how much of a nerd I am. I started watching it, of course, on Netflix, all 14 seasons.
Wow.
And I started watching it again, and because I'm this much of a nerd, I've got a little spreadsheet going of course I do, of the different, I'm basically keeping crime statistics each episode I watch and saying, you know, JB, you got a lot of explaining to do. and so I've roped a couple people in actually just this evening. I said, okay, I need you guys to watch this season. And we're actually going to do a statistical analysis because
wow.
the crime rate in Cabot Cove is like Detroit in 2010. Yeah. I mean, it's off
that,
the charts.
It's not that big a town. By the end of the series, you'd think everybody in town would be dead.
The only people alive is the sheriff and like Seth, right?
Yeah.
Like that's the only people, and that's because they're actually useful to her.
That's why she never murders them.
Pawns.
Allegedly.
That's why she doesn't yeah. murder them. That's my point. She's like dastardly scheming.
I saw someone had done something similar with... I can't.
Law
Sunny,
and Order.
Is it
They've
Sunnyvale?
Definitely done it with
one. No, Buffy the Vampire Slayer, where they're like figuring out like this tiny little town where the Hellmouth is. Like, how many people need to get eaten by vampires to sustain the vampires? How many people die in an episode? Like, what's the rough size of the high school? What population would that support? Like, this city is on a decline in population and will be abandoned in 12 years. Like, in 12 years from now, the rate of vampire killings, no one will be left in this town.
But
it just fits
Santa
with
Anna.
A theme that no matter what Buffy does, she's really kind of just a failure.
Well, yeah, and then the town's destroyed. So, I mean, they just accelerated the timeline.
Okay, so back to CSI. So you are into the forensic chemistry. So how accurate is CSI? Is it complete bullshit or is it pretty good? Look at that face. You can't see this face on the radio, but she's...
It's a great radio face.
Yeah.
complete bullshit.
Oh, no.
Well, you know, and the thing is, it's, you know, nobody is an expert in everything. I think that's probably one of the biggest myths is in science, we're very, you know, you get levels of expertise. And, you know, especially when you get a PhD, you should be, by the end, when you defend, an expert in your one teeny tiny sliver of a corner of a very specialized field. You are that expert. And so I think one of the biggest myths of those shows is that everybody who works for, you know, CSI Miami is an expert in everything. And everything happens at like warp speed 9.
Well, yeah, that's definitely something. I feel like as a viewer who doesn't know a lot about forensic science, that's something I understand. But I'm also not of the average intelligence of, like, I mean, if you think about the average person, Jesus. But, like, I don't care if that sounds snotty. I'm serious. Like, and I understand that those tests are sped up for television, that those would be, like, week-long, you know, ratings.
Yeah, and I'm not even bothered about that, because we are getting to the point, you know, with, especially, I think there was some really great posts that came out when they identified Osama bin Laden, is that you can do it in 4 to 6 hours if you've got a dedicated technician and an instrument. That's not the problem.
And lots of money.
And lots, you know, and you speed it, fast track it. You can do it really, really quickly. I think the biggest problem I have with the show, I worked for a crime lab for a couple years out of grad school, is they never show what you spend at least 50% of your time doing, at least minimum 50%, which is the paperwork. Because it's not sexy.
Is it tracking evidence stuff like that? Like,
documenting everything you do, because you should, right? Whether you literally grab something out of a cabinet, you move it to your workspace, you move it to the lab, you then are going to take notes, and when you do all of that stuff, takes time, even if you do it in shorthand, and they never show that kind of detail.
Science is tedious. If they wanted to make it sexy, could they like do the paperwork while they're like working out?
Well, they try to do, you know, I mean, especially too, I mean, the labs are not well lit. Everything is like blue mood lighting, and they've got touch screens everywhere.
They do all have lighting, like their car, like their lab is a car that's been like souced up in like a Fast and Furious movie.
It's like Pimp My Lab.
It's like, that's a nice neon undercarriage. Like, wow.
That's kind of a show I want to see now.
Pimp My Lab. I would totally host that show. That would be amazing.
Because you know, you get the ground effects lighting on your microscope. Yeah. Or like,
and we do have ground effect lighting on our microscopes.
I want bubble tubing, just for no reason, just to really provide the atmosphere of science being done.
Yeah.
When we finally get that cable skeptics network, that should be one of the shows.
Yay!
Pimp My Lab should be one of the shows.
And touch screens. Like, everything with touch screen doesn't make any sense. You're contaminated, right? You're touching pieces of evidence, and then you're like, swipe, swipe, swipe. I don't understand.
At least they're never like, what is this?
No.
Definitely murder.
Now we're getting back to Prometheus, aren't we?
Oh, yeah, Jesus Christ.
Yeah.
That was why I like watching the old shows like Quincy, where they would actually do that. They would just be like, and you're like, holy Christ, what are you doing?
So you were talking about, you know, everybody has a specialty. What is your specialty? What is your thing?
Yeah, so I am an analytical chemist. So I don't make chemicals. I detect them. And so I often say that, you know, you can find a needle. Finding a needle in a haystack is very easy, because a needle isn't anything like a haystack. But finding a very particular needle in a stack of needles, that is what I do.
That's what you do.
So, you know, if I want to find a very particular chemical, or I want to study a very particular interaction in a very complicated system, like a biological fluid, or I want to monitor, you know, some type of biological event, then we need to design the right detection scheme to do that. And so that's what I do.
Do you you have to generally know what you're looking for before you start that process, or is it sometimes you're not sure what you're looking for that's different?
Both.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
The latter sounds really difficult.
Sometimes you're monitoring a process and you're not really sure what's all involved in the process, and sometimes you are targeting a very specific chemical, and that can be a bit easier, but because especially the medium that you're in, if you're looking at, say, I mean, in a cup of coffee, which is, let's face it, like the elixir of life, there's,
which you could prove,
yes,
yeah,
and I say yes it is, there's over 1,000 chemicals that have just currently been detected. And as the methods get better, as our limits of detection get lower, we can find more and more. So, you know, being able to find that needle in a stack of needles, we're able to do that better as the technology gets better. So even if we're targeting a very specific thing, it doesn't mean that's easier. I don't want to make it sound like it's easier.
I can't wait to tell my anti-GMO aunt that her coffee is full of chemicals.
Totally. All the chemicals.
We had a guest, Marina Hagioter, on, and she was talking about lab funding and difficulty getting you know, funding for just to do science and in her field, which is a biological field. Are you experiencing those same problems in your field, in chemistry, in labs?
Yeah, and it can be. I mean, you know, chemistry is super diverse. I mean, I'm a member of the American Chemical Society, which is the largest professional society. There are over 20 divisions.
Wow.
So you've got food chemistry, which does all the really awesome, like bacon, why does it smell so delicious? Somebody has studied that. You've got people who, you know, do, I mean, all kinds. You know, analytical division is own division. You've got people own division do intellectual property or chemistry in the law. So you've got a big diversity there. And it's funny because basic research, people sometimes, it really is trend, it's trendy. There are trendy sciences. And for a while, especially after, unfortunately, when big events happen, that can really have an impact on where funding goes. And when, you know, 9/11 happened, you know, rightly so, we needed to decide how can we use our scientific know-how to be able to detect certain explosives or, you know, certain devices. And so there was a little bit of a funding shift. And of course, you know, there's a huge amount of money that goes into various cancer projects. There's a huge amount of money that goes into heart disease, various different types. But even then, the budget for basic research, and it sounds kind of funny, but basic stuff like, is chemical A soluble in this solvent? That's kind of basic research. You just need someone to put this chemical in that solvent and say, yep, it dissolves. And that sounds really basic, but what would we use it for? Well, we would use it for being able to design systems of detection, being able to know how we should deliver drugs. And that kind of basic research, sometimes you can't convince people to give you money for it because you're not curing cancer.
It's not sexy.
It's not in the trend sometimes. And also, overall science funding doesn't get anywhere near the monetary support. I encourage all of you, this is the kind of crowd that would do that. If you look up right now who's on the Science and Space and Technology Committee, you will probably lose your shit to see who's actually on that committee. Yeah.
Wasn't Michelle Bachmann on a Science and Learning Committee? For
intelligence.
It doesn't matter what committee she was all, on. She was not smart enough to be on it.
Well, that's just the thing, is that you get, you know, these internal committees in Congress. How many congressmen were scientists? Oh, probably. I'm just going to guess none. I'm going to guess none congressmen were scientists before they went into the public sphere.
A lot of them were lawyers.
So it makes you wonder, like, how we can. It's got to be so incredibly fucking frustrating to know that people who have never had anything to do with your field are deciding that goes to your field because of what they think it does.
Because there's a really strong advocate, actually. In New Mexico, who's not a scientist, but his congressional district covers a national lab.
Mm.
And I don't think you have to be a scientist to understand facts.
True. Again,
and
Congress.
To support your constituency. I said you didn't have to be.
Your own facts.
But I think it's, you know, how are you representing your constituency? And his constituency includes a major national lab, of which there aren't really that many, right? Mm. There's less than a dozen national labs, and they're only in certain, like, Pacific Northwest Laboratory, China Lake, Sandita. So his constituency, and he's visited quite often. He's, you know, asked the right questions, and he's, you know, pursuing that, just like, you know, you would hope the Congress person and senators that are covering the various different NASA facilities and Atlanta, the CDC, that's going to be split into its own congressional district. So, you know, who's representing those people, the Scientific Technology and Space Committee, and then even within that, the Appropriations Committee, and all of these. You know, and there's various scientific organizations that are watching policy and funding decisions. It's terrifying to me, though, when people are on the committee that don't. I'm not saying they have to be a scientist, but they're not even seeking out the expertise in their own constituency.
Right, right.
When you've got people on the science committee that believe Earth is 6,000 years old, that's kind of scary.
And they're not even representing the people that maybe voted for them.
Right.
Yeah. That's what's even more to me as a person who's representing. I mean, I live in Nebraska, which, if you don't know, is a little red overall.
I've worked for a number of internet service providers on the backbone of the internet for a larger, you know, countrywide provider, and I when I hear anyone in the government talk about how the internet should work, it's infuriating, because I just don't even want to go into it in super detail, but it's really, really frustrating, because what they propose and how they talk about it is it just sounds like everything they know and everything they've been informed by has been from a lobbyist for a company. And like, that's, it sounds like, and it seems like that's where they get all their information from, and like, that's whose side they have in this fight. And so I don't know if that's the same at all, or if that's...
Yeah, do you guys have lobbyists? Like, does the American Chemistry Society have lobbyists?
Yeah. Well, yes, we do. There is actually, well, I don't know if it's lobbyists, but there's a policy office, and they have, you can actually apply. AAAS has a fellowship program where PhDs get assigned to various government agencies and congressional offices, and the American Chemical Society manages a few of those fellowships. To kind of, you know, say, hey, these are some of the issues when you go through the application process. You know, these are some of the issues that I'm really passionate about, and I could maybe be an expert on and contribute. And they try to match you up, you know, either with the right person or the right agency to kind of provide that level of expertise. And so, yeah, I think that there's a push to that, but you can't underestimate, you know, the power of a good, you know, social media campaign. I think there's a lot of people go, oh, you know, online activism doesn't have a point. Oh, yes, it does.
Yeah, things can get done.
Yes, things can get done, especially, you know, if you're saying that old kind of, I remember back, you know, in the 80s, so long ago, you know, when mastodons roamed the earth?
I remember that.
They said, you know, for every mastodons. One letter, that letter, these were letters, and then we used to write them on papyrus.
I used clay tablets mostly, but I remember
cuneiform.
Where every letter would represent, you know, how many constituents.
Oh, sure.
And the same thing goes now. It's even easier. You can go to, you know, congress.gov, and you can actually, you know, email your entire congressional delegation in one fell swoop. And a lot of professional organizations like ACS, you can actually send it to blast everybody at the same time with a form letter and just fill in your email saying, hey, I'm really concerned about the science funding or the technology funding or this bill. But even better than that is pick up the damn phone. Because they're so used to people, we're like, what? I can't text them and be like, YOLO, LOL, that you pick up the phone. And if you actually get...
Wait, is that an ineffective method for communicating with Congress?
It is, because I've tried
it.
And it doesn't work. But if you pick up the phone, I did
Sorry,
that with
guys. Hobby Lobby's on me.
With the web, is you pick up the phone and you get someone on the phone and you say, hi, I'm Rachel Burks, and I'm really concerned about, you know, our lack of education funding in K-12 for the sciences. You know, is there a way I can drop in? Because a lot of your Congress critters, as I've heard them being referred to, do like, you know, local coffee hours and whatever.
Oh, sure.
You know, you should show up and ask them, hey, what can I do?
And then do I say YOLO?
And then you yell out, YOLO!
Because I like, yeah. I just like, I need to yell it all the time. You know why? Because you only live once. I'm sorry.
Oh, there you go. Wow. Guys. Mic drop. Yeah. Okay, so we got to move on to our five questions.
Five questions.
Yeah, but before I really...
That was a really good note to go out on, guys. I'm really happy for that. You're all very welcome.
There is something I need to know, two things I need to know, hopefully very quick. Number one, does your lab still have a dot matrix printer in it? Because I always imagine science labs still have dot matrix printers in them.
Yes.
It does. Yes. And what is your favorite element?
I would have to go, my favorite element would be yttrium.
Yeah. Ooh. Yttrium. That's exciting. Why?
Because you just never see it in shit. It's like the underdog of elements.
I need to know your feelings on molybdenum, because that's the only one that sounds like my name.
I just love it because Mo.
Yes.
Yeah, there you go. Okay, right, so we're going to do our five questions. We have five questions we ask all of our guests at the end of our podcast. So we're going to start right over there with Nick. Nick, question number one.
What's the best movie you've seen in the last 30 days? And that can be at home, in the theater, Netflix, whatever.
Netflix, Cockneys versus Zombies.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Former Convergence guest of honor, James Moran, wrote that movie.
Yes, yeah. And he's fun on Twitter, which is basically Lock, Stock, and Lots of Shambling Zombies, which is why I love that damn movie.
I haven't seen it yet.
And that's available. That's available on Netflix, right?
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Awesome.
Good answer. Right.
Question two. Who is your favorite atheist character?
Frank Underwood.
Nice.
Yeah.
Oh my God, we just started watching that.
Yes. We
just started season two of House of Cards. Like, right before, it was like getting ready, last minute costume prep for Convergence, hot gluing shit to other shit while like watching.
It's one of my favorite GIFs. You know, I'm looking at it right now. I pray to myself for myself.
Yeah.
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 That's how confident he is in his own judgment.
Well, and what I loved about that, I actually said when that line happened, I turned to Nick and I'm like, but doesn't, technically that's what everyone does. Yeah. I mean, technically everyone is praying to themselves for themselves because you're really just trying to self-actualize what you want.
So yeah, that's the HBO, Netflix original series. Yeah. House
yes,
of Cards.
It's so good.
I don't know, the first time we tried watching it, we watched the first episode and we were like, maybe not for us. And we had so many friends that had such a strong response to it that we came back. And we watched the first episode and we're like, what the fuck was wrong with us?
Past
this is
Molly
really
and
good.
I don't know.
Like, yeah, and it was brilliant. It's the same episode. Nothing changed except for we weren't stupid this time.
I think I was drunker.
Yeah.
Oh, maybe that's it. Okay, question number three. What is your geekiest hobby?
I think it's the, you know, keeping crime statistics of Murder, She Wrote.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think that's a safe.
If you have a hobby that you involves like putting data into a spreadsheet and then like, you know, generating some graphs. Oh yeah.
Yeah,
oh,
that qualifies as geeky. Yeah. I think we'll accept
for sure.
it.
Okay.
Yeah. All right.
Question number four. What is your favorite sandwich?
BLT.
Mm.
On toasted sourdough. A little bit of mayo, and when I'm feeling wild and crazy, a bit of sharp cheddar.
Oh. Ooh. And you're a mayo, not Miracle Whip.
Did you just say Miracle Whip?
Okay.
Miracle Whip.
These are important things we need to understand.
This is important.
Yeah, yeah. Some people, you know, they what? Say one and they mean
some
another.
People, just like a better class of people, prefer Miracle Whip to mayonnaise.
White people.
Wait a minute. Did I just get called white for not liking mayonnaise? What happened here?
what was the opposite of the stereotype?
I'll accept that.
All right, and question number five is, what is the stupidest thing anyone has ever said to you about your atheism / agnosticism?
So now is a bad time to bring up the fact that I'm a born-again Christian? Is that...
No, now's a great time. Yeah. Let's get into that.
Yeah. You bitches need Jesus? No. It hasn't happened yet, which is, you know, I mean, my mom's a minister, and she's just like, yeah, you know, whatever. It hasn't happened yet, but I'm confident that it'll happen soon.
I believe.
How about what's the dumbest thing anybody has ever said that you've read or heard about atheism?
Oh, that there's, you know, just the idea that if you're an atheist that you have no morals.
Ah, yes.
That general argument.
It's the most common one we hear for sure.
Yeah.
That's a lot. Because
religious people are totally known for being totes moral all the time.
Well, of course.
Yeah, just look at like prison population statistics. No, I mean, that shows that it's all atheists.
They know what morality is and choose to ignore it. We're just without any knowledge of what it is. We're just not even having it.
So if we
accidentally not doing bad.
Yeah, if we live moral life, it's by accident.
Yeah.
It's like, oops. Didn't kill somebody today.
Yeah. Every time I'm a good person, it's completely out of my control. Yeah.
Fuck, did I just donate to a charity? How'd that happen? I don't even know.
I donated $20 to a charity while stabbing this guy.
I'm so conflicted. Wait, no, I'm not. I don't have any morals. Yeah.
They're so atheists. Conflicted. You just never know what they're going to do.
Wait, no, I'm not.
The chaotic neutral of the religious world.
I love all of you crazy motherfuckers.
Yeah. Fantastic. All right. Well, Ray, this has been a great conversation. Thank you so much for joining us.
I think
she's going to stick around because the next episode we're going to talk Game of Thrones, and I think she's going to be here for that one. But where can they find you online? Where can our fine listeners find you online?
Twitter. Because Facebook, I can't be asked anymore. Twitter, Dr. Ravidium, please follow. Don't troll. Do troll if you want awesome gifts. I will respond.
Well, wait,
to
now you're encouraging.
Yeah. Well, it'll only be one. Awesome it'll gifts. Be bless your heart, which everyone knows if you're from the South is means
go fuck
you.
Yourself.
Yeah.
So. Yeah.
Oh, well, bless your heart.
Bless your heart.
Bless it so hard.
So thank you very much. We really appreciate you joining us today. We've been Geeks Without God. Thank you to our audience for joining us today. We will catch you next time. Goodbye, everybody.
Bye, everybody.
Bye.
Even though he didn't say it, I'm pretty sure Nick's favorite element is boron.
We're geeks. We're geeks without God. We don't recognize moral authority. We don't accept divine superiority. We're geeks, geeks without God.
Until next time, you can find us blogging at geekswithoutgod.com. You can follow us on Twitter at geekswithoutgod, and you can even like us on Facebook.
We're geeks,
we're geeks, we're geeks without God.
We're geeks,
we're geeks, we're geeks without God.
We're geeks, geeks without God.
Except you're all going to stay.
Yeah, but not really.
All right,
bye.